Daily news and analysis. We keep you informed and inspired.
This is World Today.
Welcome to World Today, a news program with a different perspective. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. In this edition, we discuss Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi's recent trip to Australia and broader China-Australia relations. In his most recent visit to Australia, Wang Yi participated in the 7th China-Australia Foreign and Strategic Dialogue with Australian Foreign Minister Penning Wong, met with Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, and sat down with leaders in the business and strategic sectors in Australia. This was Wang Yi's first visit to Australia in 7 years. Albanese told Wang Yi that Australia-China relations should not be defined by differences and disagreements. Wang Yi said that since bilateral relations have returned to the right track, the two sides should move forward without hesitation, wavering, or backpedaling. What's been learned from strained relations in the past few years? What's the way forward that will benefit both sides? For these questions and much more on China-Australia relations, I'm joined by Tony Kevin, former Australian ambassador to Poland and Cambodia and author of the book Return to Moscow. Dr. Jeff Raby AO, former Australian ambassador to China, also non-executive independent company director chairman, Jeff Raby and Associates. Also, we have Dr. Zhao Hai, Director of International Political Studies at the National Institute for Global Strategy, Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. Thank you all for joining me to talk about this very important trip by Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi. Now, let's begin by taking a look at, in general, the occasions of this visit by Wang Yi. Maybe let me start with Dr. Ambassador Raby, please.
Well, yes. As you said, I think the main point is the visit took place, it being the first one after 7 years, which is an extraordinarily and unprecedented long time for the foreign minister of China not to have visited Australia. So it was extremely important in that respect. It was a reciprocal visit for the visit the Australian foreign minister made last year. And the atmosphere is very positive, and we can fairly confidently say that the relationship is now pretty much back to normal.
Mm. Dr. Zhao Hai, from China's perspective, how would you comment on the occasion of this visit?
I think this visit marks a very significant change of bilateral relationship that started from a year and a half ago. And this is very important because remember that Wang Yi hasn't visited Australia for 7 years. And remember, 7 years ago, what happened is that the U.S. Changed government, and the Trump government changed its China policy, and then follow that up, Australian government also changed its policy towards China. And that has been, you know, this bilateral relationship has been deteriorating for the past couple of years, and now it's finally get back on track. So I think this occasion marked a beginning of a new era, and hopefully this improvement can continue for the foreseeable future.
Mm, indeed, stabilization, that's been the word that's been talked and mentioned about quite a lot on both sides. Ambassador Kevin, let me go to you. From Australia's perspective, what are the main achievements of this meeting between Wang Yi and top Australian officials, including, you know, Albanese, Penny Wong, etc.? Ambassador Kevin.
Thank you for having me on the program. For me, the visit marks an opportunity to break the downward slide in Chinese-Australian relations, which began with President Obama's visit to Australia in 2011 and the famous American pivot to Asia. Mm. Since that time, Australia has come under increasing pressure from the United States and pro-American elites in the Australian intelligence and military industrial complex area to line up with the United States in a very aggressive containment of China. So China's behaved with enormous patience during this very long period. And Australian prime ministers, from Malcolm Turnbull through to Scott Morrison, behaved with great rudeness and insensitivity towards China. With the election of a Labour government, there's certainly been an improvement in tone, more diplomatic manners, basically. But I think the basic problems are still there.
Mm.
And I don't share Jeff Raby's optimism that we've really turned the corner. I think we are in a moment of extreme both opportunity and danger. And the Chinese foreign minister has made this very clear in his diplomatic language, that reading between the words, which I hope we'll be doing during the course of this discussion, he's very much put Australia on the spot.
Mm. Now, Ambassador Raby, how would you respond to Ambassador Kevin's words? And from what you see, I mean, what has been the achievements for Australia after this visit?
Look, I think Tony's referring to the bigger geopolitical contest that is being played out. Of course, Australia's caught up very much in that and have been for a long time, as Tony said. My point is that in the day-to-day management of the relationship, things are very different than they were 18 months ago. I think we will see the removal of all the remaining and quite unjustified Chinese trade measures that were introduced against Australia. These reciprocal high-level visits really do speak of return to normalisation. And I think for me, the bigger take out of the whole visit is that there was a clear announcement that Premier Li Qian will visit Australia in June or July, again reciprocating the visit to Beijing last year by the Australian Prime Minister. So in terms of the day-to-day management of the relationship, I think it is actually back to something like business as usual. We will never have a return to the effervescence of what existed 15 or 20 years ago in the relationship, certainly not during my time as ambassador here. And that's simply because China has grown so big, so powerful. It's a very different world today. But again, I come back to the point of distinguishing between, if you like, the global geopolitical contest, which will continue to intensify, and how we manage the relationship on a day-to-day basis.
Mm, indeed. Well, just to clarify, I think we're still, you know, waiting for official word from both governments to declare any high-level visits reciprocal from either side, you know, at this moment. Let me go to Dr. Zhao Hai for a moment, because earlier Ambassador Jeff Raby told about Australia feels like there have been unjustified trade measures from China, in the past few years. How would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I think China-Australia trade is really, really mutually beneficial, because just now, I think we mentioned the two sides, bilateral trade has reached a new high, surpassing pre-pandemic era, and reached about $230 billion. That's very significant for countries like, Australia. And remember, I think Australia, during the time of difficulty, also made Indo-Pacific strategy, trying to diversify its trade relations and increase export to other countries. But the result is that there's no other country that can replace China. Mm-hmm. I still remember that at one time, when the relationship getting tense, and I asked somebody like, can Australian iron ore find another buyer, and can China find another supplier? And the answer is no, because China and Australia is a perfect match. That amount of iron ore has no second buyer, and China cannot find that quality of iron ore or quantity from any other country. So that's significant, I think, signified how the two countries are, fitting with each other in terms of their goods and services. And I think there's still a large room for growth in the future.
Mm.
And to answer your question, I think it's very simple, because remember the last government, the conservative government really put pressure on China and particularly followed the US, and they first banned Huawei in Australia ahead of other countries. And that is a very bad example. And also Australia has attacked China verbally, particularly during the pandemic, and also accusing China of unfounded foreign interference kind of cases.
Mm.
So I think in many cases, it's not that I don't think blame China one-sidedly is justified in this case.
Well, as our Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi has already said, now the relationship is back on the right track. Let's just try to move forward to, you know, to look at this issue more constructively. Again, Dr. Zhao Hai, from China's perspective, what are the main achievements of this visit?
I think there are threefold, as Foreign Minister Wang Yi has specified. Number one, it's very important both sides set aside differences and recognize the common ground, and we can build on top of that common ground to realize a strategic, comprehensive strategic partnership. That's most important. Mm-hmm. And the second thing it's very important is to recognize that this trade relationship, cultural people-to-people relationship, is really mutually beneficial. And thirdly, I think, is that Australia, again, discovered that a more independent foreign policy is crucial to deal with China. Because if you follow, and listening to command of other countries, losing your own foreign policy autonomy, that's going to interfere and, bring destruction to the bilateral relationship. And restoring bilateral relationship must be based on that. And China also emphasized our foreign policy is independent. We're not getting into any alliance against Australia. So I think strategically speaking, Australia shouldn't worry about its geopolitical relations with China.
Well, let's take a look at, you know, the respective words from the two foreign ministers after this seventh China-Australia Foreign and Strategic Dialogue. Penny Wong said that from now on, Australia will be Australia, China will be China, during the press conference. Wang Yi talked about the experiences of handling China-Australia relations. He mentioned four aspects, of which I think Dr. Zhao Hai has kind of talked about. So these four aspects are to uphold mutual respect, to stay committed to seeking common ground while shelving differences, to pursue mutual benefit and win-win results, and the last one is to remain independent. Let me go to Ambassador Kevin. How would you interpret, you know, the words from both Penny Wong and Wang Yi? Ambassador Kevin.
As to Penny Wong, I would criticize her position as still being, although more politely expressed, the same transactional approach to relations with China that characterized the three previous Australian administrations. In terms of Wang Yi, the four aspects, it's interesting he didn't call them four principles or anything grand like that. He said four aspects. The most important one is the first, because if Australia can't remain independent, which means independent of the United States, there's no way Australia can pursue a policy towards China on the other three aspects, to uphold mutual respect, to stay committed to seeking common ground while shelving differences, and to pursue mutual benefit and win-win results. So, I mean, we've been pursuing this fallacious policy now for many years, and it's been getting worse, of trying to, as it were, align with the military power of the United States against our most significant trading partner that we just heard about. And it's quite inconsistent to think we can go on doing that. We have to make choices on the basis of Australian national sovereignty and what's best for our country and our people. Mm. And I'd like to mention some very important developments within Australia over the last month that support that view. And first of all was a statement drafted by former foreign ministers Bob Carr and Gareth Evans, and supported by 48 other Australian dignitaries across a wide variety of fields, trade, academic, and politics, and so on, which really endorsed those four principles in different language. Mm. It's a very good statement. If I find fault with it, would be that we're still pursuing this rather egotistical idea that we can go out and influence the region as a middle power. I think what we need to be doing is listening to the region.
Mm.
And I'm quite sure that during the ASEAN summit in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, which was shortly before Wang Yi's visit, Mr. Albanese would have been privately told by senior ASEAN leaders from Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, and so on, that it wasn't welcome for Australia to be joining in this military encirclement of China, that the ASEAN way was to do things differently, to handle gently. And the third important statement, of course, was made by former Prime Minister Paul Keating, who's an Australian elder statesman of great distinction, after his private meeting with Wang Yi. And in very few succinct sentences, Keating once again brought out the point that Australia-China relations will not work until they're based on proper mutual respect, proper diplomacy, proper sense of mutual security, and just to sort of get out of this banker-trader mentality into something a little bit more fundamental.
Ambassador Raby, what's your comment, you know, on these four aspects mentioned by Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, and also, you know, Australia will be Australia, China will be China by Penny Wong?
Yeah, well, I think the 4 points are quite sensible and practical, and that's how you would normally manage this sort of relationship, and most relationships are managed this way. I think the difficult one, of course, for the Australian government is the independence of foreign policy. And as Tony has sort of outlined, there's been a big discussion about that in the last month or so in Australia. Not enough, perhaps, at the political level in Australia, but certainly people are very concerned about the extent to which we seem to be becoming a hostage to US foreign policy priorities. And particularly with respect to China. So that is very difficult. And I think in many ways, Penny Wong, the Australian foreign minister, constantly tries to dance around that issue. I mean, she has a formula, which is looking for strategic equilibrium in Asia. And it sounds fine. But the problem for Penny Wong is her notion of strategic equilibrium means that means U.S. continuing preeminence in East Asia. That's the problem. She can't move away from that because of our very deep security alliance with the United States. So there's a sort of contradiction. There's something that's not spoken in Penny Wong's position. And strategic equilibrium really means continued U.S. preeminence. Whereas I think people in Australia who talk about a more independent foreign policy are prepared to accept that there will be no major state that will dominate the region, and that you know, it'll be necessary to find balance amongst shifting coalitions of countries. But it's very, very hard for any Australian foreign minister to move away from a position that would not see the U.S. is the dominant power in the region.
Well, indeed, the geostrategic situation is, you know, changing every second. Well, we have about a minute and a half to go to a break. But Dr. Zhao Hai, of these four principles or aspects mentioned by Foreign Minister Wang Yi, which one do you think is the most important?
Well, I think from China's perspective, of course, the most important is to set aside differences and, you know, enlarge the common ground. So basically working together on the issues that we can agree with each other and increase our mutual benefits. So right now, one of the biggest problem, of course, is what Ambassador Raby mentioned, you know, that the independence of Australia's foreign policy may be a hostage to a foreign agenda. And right now, there's domestic obstacles to improve Australia-China relations because there are, you know, some think tanks actually working for the United States and promoting false accusations and misrepresenting China's international global intentions. And that is really bad influence on the public opinion in Australia. And secondly, Australia is wrapped up in a quadrilateral mechanism and also AUKUS, all kinds of security and military alliance and mechanism that designed by the United States. So it's hard to get out of that. And because of this, China is saying basically, we want to set aside of those differences you can be Australia, and just like Penny Wong said, but at the same time, you know, working together on some bilateral beneficial issues so that both countries can improve our mutual trust and people-to-people friendly friendship for the future.
Well, if you're just joining us, we are. This is World Today, and we are having a panel discussion on Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi's recent visit to Australia and broader China-Australia relations. We're going to a short break. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion.
Dan Wang, Chief Economist of Hang Seng Bank China. The World Today is a real fun program. You will hear interesting people discussing global trend, economic event, what's happening in and outside of China. So, friends around the world, hope you can join us.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. In this edition, we discuss Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi's recent visit to Australia and broader China-Australia relations. We have with us Tony Kevin, former Australian ambassador to Poland and Cambodia, also the author of the book Return to Moscow, Dr. Jeff Raby, AO, former Australian ambassador to China, non-executive independent company director chairman, Jeff Raby and Associates. Also, we have Dr. Zhao Hai, Director of International Political Studies at the National Institute for Global Strategy, Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. Now, let me go back to Ambassador Kevin for a bit. People also often say that China-US relations is arguably the most important bilateral relations in the world. And both China and Australia have very, consider the relations with United States very important for them. But Ambassador Kevin, in your opinion, why, in what ways do China-Australia relations matter for both sides?
Well, there's always been the question of Australia's strategic geography, in particular our satellite tracking stations, joint facilities with the United States, that give Australia's geography a very important role in giving the United States nuclear war-making capacities in the same way as with Pine Gap provided these capacities for the U.S. against the Soviet Union. It's now coming into view against China as the United States militarizes its own position of military containment of China. And what this means paradoxically is that although Australia is a country poses no threat to China, Australia's strategic geography does. And that puts Australia in the position that we have to take much more seriously the need to preserve our national independence, the need to ensure that we don't be seen by China as a compliant puppet of the United States, threatening China in the most basic strategic ways. And I'm somewhat amused and impressed by one Yi's diplomatic language in expressing these sorts of points. Paul Keating commented after his private meeting with Wang Yi. Keating commented, Wang Yi both encouraged and welcomed Australia's continuing integration with East Asia, where he believed Australia's future lies. And I believe that was a polite way of urging Australia to disentangle from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And in a similar way, Penny Wong, less than 2 years ago, was suggesting that we should be finding security in Asia, not from Asia. And she was suggesting that Australia should seek an order framed by strategic equilibrium. And as has been correctly pointed out, that is not the kind of strategic equilibrium that involves American military power contained in China. It's a strategic equilibrium based on mutual respect and mutual security. So we've still got quite a long way to go, although the statement of the 50 Australian leading figures gives some good markers to that effect. to achieve a proper relationship between Australia and China. And I'll just, on this moment, say finally that I don't think that the forthcoming visit from the Chinese Prime Minister is necessarily a done deal. I think there were enough let-outs there that if there were to be an anti-Chinese reaction in Australia led by the pro-American sort of implants in our political system and our military system, that visit might come into question. So I think we're very much on probation, and I hope that we will follow the right course.
Mm.
Can I just come in?
Yeah, Ambassador, please.
Come on, you pick me up on this. But no, Penny Wong, in her press statement, straight after the meeting with Wong Yi, said very explicitly that the visit was happening in June. Now, I agree very much with Tony that things can come out of left field and blow these things off course. I don't like to think that we are on probation. I don't think people would welcome that. Anything can disrupt a high-level visit from any country, not just one from China. But Penny Wong was very explicit about a visit in mid-year. So I think we could take that as a given, subject to any unknown, and we don't know the unknowns, of course.
Mm. I mean, that's the thing, because we're still in March, and I'm 100% sure that we are waiting for the official word, at least from the Chinese side. But again, you know, Ambassador Raby, again, going back to you, in your observation, in your opinion, in your daily, you know, management of this bilateral relations when you were ambassador, why do this specific bilateral relationship matter for Australia?
Well, it matters enormously, and it goes beyond the transactional. Of course, Joe High has talked about the economic dimensions of it, and they're enormous, and they're mutually beneficial, and the complementarities are profound. But you know, China is a very significant part of the region. Of course, it goes without saying, and all of Australia's interests, whether it's stability on the Korean Peninsula, whether it's asymmetric security issues such as money laundering, criminal activities, terrorism, whatever, people smuggling is a very big one for Australia. All of these issues require Australia to engage closely with China and China to engage with Australia and work in a very cooperative way. And it's quite interesting that if you go beyond the headline issues, which tend to be beaten up and exaggerated greatly in Australia, you find that there's a lot of practical level cooperation between Australia and China. Now, that was disrupted over the last 4 years, sadly, because of the antagonistic and aggressive behaviour of the Australian government towards China, particularly under the Morrison government. But we need to get back to that. And just as China wants to deal with criminal activity between Australia and China, we want to do the same. So, we cannot as Australians live in the region without having very constructive, very productive, very close and trusting relations with China. And we had that once, and we need to find a way to get back there. And one part of that is this ongoing high-level dialogue, which has been resumed. As I said with my opening remarks, 7 years without a foreign minister's visit from China is astonishing.
It's quite something.
Almost no one in the region could take us seriously if we are unable to manage our relationship with China. It's as simple as that.
Well, Dr. Zhao Hai, why does this relationship matter for China then?
Well, I think Australia apparently is a very important country in the Southern Hemisphere. So literally, Australia is part of the global South, and it has strategic, geographic position. It has good, very important trade relations with China, and it has a huge, very tight, sort of close people-to-people relationship with China as well. So that's one thing we can't ignore bilaterally. But I want to emphasize another aspect, which is that from the 1990s, Australia has been a leader of regionalism, and China has benefited and also cooperated with Australia on that aspect. So the emerging of APAC, for instance, you know, Asia Pacific region, is one of Australia's contribution. And also Australia and China is one of the first countries, among others, to sign a bilateral free trade agreement. And then later on, we're both in RCEP. And also right now, China is trying to apply to join CPTPP, which Australia is part of. So I think in many cases, Australia and China can work together on global governance issues, on regional trade issues, and on a lot of rules-based regional kind of regulations and rules. And in the future, there are a lot of things we need to work together on, for instance, on service trade, on digital data flow, and also on many important issues like climate change. And also, like Ambassador mentioned, a lot of other, law enforcement aspect. So I think, in this world, I almost forgot, also in G20. Mm-hmm. So I think in this world, both countries need each other. And without the other part, we can't work out this global governance and global, system and work on our common challenges. So that's why this bilateral relationship is so important in today's world.
Mm. Well,
can I add to that, please?
Yeah, please, Ambassador.
Thank you. I think we shouldn't only be thinking about the importance of Chinese-Australian relations in an Asia-Pacific regional context. We should be actually talking about it in a global governance context. Now, China is a permanent member of the Security Council, and it always has been since the formation of the United Nations. China is taking an increasingly active and very positive global role, in, as we just heard in the news bulletin before this discussion, seeking to bring about negotiations between Russia and Ukraine over the conflict there, also seeking to assist towards restoration of peace and security for the people of Gaza, subject to possibly genocidal assault. These are big global questions. They're the questions that could generate a World War III. And Australia should be talking to China about these sorts of issues in a frank and mutually respectful way and not hide behind the American alliance and say, oh, that's out of our league, that's above our pay grade, to use the Australian vernacular. We don't really want to talk about those things. That's a matter for our senior security partner.
Mm.
I would like to see the opening up of a real mutually respectful, mutually responsible dialogue at the level of Prime Minister or indeed at the level of Deputy Prime Minister or at the level of Premier.
Mm.
So, all those possibilities still await us.
Mm.
And I'm not a pessimist who says that we can't go back to the golden years of Australia-China relations 15 years ago. Mm. There's no reason why we shouldn't.
Mm.
We have a large Chinese-Australian population in this country, which is a unifying factor between the two countries. We're not threatened by China in any way. We have allowed ourselves to be inveigled into an unproductive security relationship with the United States. That's something we have to work out for ourselves. But meanwhile, we should be talking to China for the very large mutual benefits that provides.
Mm. Well, let's talk about America because, we have been talking about it, but I want to focus on it. Australia is a major ally of the United States. Ambassador Raby, in your opinion and your actual, work as in the foreign service, what has been the role of the United States in the development of China-Australia relations?
Well, the United States has been enormously influential, and I agree with Tony that from the 2011 Obama pivot, it became more and more difficult to manage the relationship more and more difficult for Australia to manage its relationship with China, and that very much from 2017, there was a real break from that time onwards, and we have. I've written about this in my Australian Financial Review columns. It's we hear all the time about Chinese interference in Australian domestic politics, but we have our premier think tank on security, ASPI, which is funded largely by the U.S. military industrial complex.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you could just go through it. The Murdoch press, Rupert Murdoch himself runs, you know, a very strong anti-China line. We have think tanks all over the country funded by the U.S. or U.S. Associated businesses, which maintain a constant drumbeat of anti-China criticism and rhetoric. I mean, the other thing that I've written a lot about is, well, where's the China threat? I'm not saying there is no China threat, but I'm saying those who assert there's a China threat ought to get out and demonstrate what the exact threat is. You know, and we have funded our security agencies massively in the last 5 or 6 years to hunt down and track down Chinese agents of influence. And I keep saying, you know, where are the bodies? You know, we've barely come up with a person in that period of time. So, you know, it's impossible to exaggerate, in my mind, the extent of U.S. influence over Australia-China policy.
Mm. Dr. Zhao Hai, how from China's perspective, how would you see the role of the U.S. in China's relations with Australia?
Yeah, I think a proportion of Americans' influence on the bilateral relationship is really heavy. And the thing is, China tried to, and I think some people in Australia, just like the ambassador and other people that understand from a rational point of view, China does not pose an existential kind of threat to Australia. And in reality, China should be the best friend to Australia.
Mm.
So I think in this respect, it's very hard for American to work Australia against China in the long run. However, in the short run, I think because the United States is using this paradigm of a democracy versus autocracy and trying to use ideological differences to separate China and Australia and other Asia-Pacific countries, it's been quite effective because that way they can describe the threat in a very murky, unclear, descriptive way, and not to name bodies, right?
Mm.
So it's getting easier for them to alienate and try to paint China in a very malign way, exerting influence in Australia.
Mm.
But I think one thing is very important finally, because of AUKUS, the United States find out a way to basically link the Australian military with the United States military so tightly and asking Australia invest so many money, you know, so much money in building this nuclear submarine to deal with the, unforeseen threat. It is really ridiculous. And so that is, I think, a wake-up call for many Australians to the real intention of the United States in this respect, and realizing that if Australia follows that track, it's going to hurt its own national interest and losing its sovereignty. So I think to a certain extent, it's going too far.
Mm. Now, Ambassador Raby.
Can I just make a comment on that?
Yeah.
And it's not really to disagree with what you've said. It's to simply say it's never going to happen.
What? What's never going to happen, Ambassador?
No, AUKUS. We're not going to get into the submarine, right? The idea that we talk today about this imminent and present China threat, security threat to Australia, military threat, and yet the first submarine, if it ever did happen, is not till the 2030s. Meanwhile, our own submarine fleet, the Collins-class fleet is running down. I think this won't survive one change of political term in the United States or in Australia. Just yesterday, there was a Australia-UK, UK obviously one of the AUKUS partners, meeting, and Australia has volunteered to pay $5 billion to subsidise the United Kingdom's ailing submarine building capacity. Australian taxpayers aren't going to wear that in time, and equally, the UK is not going to be able to fix up its own problems in its submarine manufacturing. All I'm saying is there are enormous practical and political problems around this. And so I'm confident it's not going to happen. And I'm sure, as again, I've written about this, that I don't think it's moved the dial one inch in terms of Beijing's sense of threats to its security.
And could I comment on
I was going to ask you anyways.
Thanks. By Jeff and by Zhang. Look, all those practical reasons my AUKUS isn't going to work, and I hope to God that Jeff is right, they need to be reinforced by a philosophy or by an ideology of Australian sovereignty. We need to get back to rediscovering who we are, who we have been, and who we can be again. We have been subject to a creeping takeover. The Australian Defence Ministries and intelligence agencies in Canberra are full of American accents. It's not a laughing matter. We've basically let the Trojan horse in right across our national security system to a point where we really have to ask ourselves who's telling us what to do and who's ever really interested in what we want to do for ourselves. And this is why China is very important to Australia also, because unlike Russia, which creates a lot of problems for a lot of people, which I won't go into here, we do have the basis for a very good relationship with China relatively quickly. And I do think that the next few months are going to be crucial, because there will be a counterattack. I think it's significant that Wang Yi declined have a press conference at the end of his visit, because he knew that the press would be spoiling to try and disrupt the good atmospherics of the visit, and would be trying basically to blight the whole parade. Those forces are still very much here in Australia. A lot of people have their careers engaged in all this anti-Chinese Sinophobia. I'm not as optimistic as my former colleague, Jeff, that I think we've got to work on this.
Okay.
We've got to provide an intellectual underpinning of what they're doing.
This reminds me of what Penny Wong said during the press conference. She said Australia-China relations needs daily work. Basically, that's the word, but maybe not exact words. I think Master Kevin talked about something which is very interesting and important and related to a recent poll that I saw. The poll was done by British newspaper The Guardian. It's about Australians' perceptions of itself, you know, in today's world. The poll found that 38% Australians believe the country should be an independent middle power with influence in the Asia-Pacific region, while only 20% said Australia should be, quote-unquote, primarily an ally of the United States. Ambassador Raby, I mean, how do you see the result of the poll, and how should Australia position itself strategically today?
Well, I saw the results as quite encouraging, and just reading them shows you the good thing about Australian people is they have a lot of common sense, and they're not overly swayed at times by a lot of the nonsense that comes out of the media on these sorts of issues. But look, how we position ourselves, I think, as I said, the management of the relationship is much more difficult now than it was. I hear Tony on all of his points, and I agree with him, and I hope he's right. But China is a much more difficult partner to deal with today. I mean, you've got issues like China's assertion of authority in the South China Sea, which is heavily disputed. There are a number of other disputes with neighbouring countries. China does, and quite rightly. I mean, I'm not criticising China for adopting a more assertive, muscular foreign policy, nor am I criticising China for its military build-up. But these things will create tensions in the relationship. They do take us in slightly different directions. And so the challenge for us really is to find a clear view of our interests in this relationship, which obviously is dominated by economic interests, but there are, as we've discussed, many other interests, and seek to find a way to build dialogue and engagement in the relationship. And I think what happened this week with the two foreign ministers meeting is part of that. I do think we need to be clearer that a future region that achieves strategic equilibrium, as the foreign minister would like, is one where neither the United States nor China dominates the region.
Mm.
And that's, I think, what we need to work towards.
Well, time's running really fast. We have about only 2.5 minutes to wrap up the whole show. But Dr. Zhaohai, has China been adjusting its policy, especially in the Asia-Pacific region? And with that, you know, in regard to that, has China's Australian policy changed?
Well, I really don't think that China's policy towards Australia sort of changed in a fundamental way. There are probably technical adaptation, but fundamentally, I think China has been very consistent in terms of how to have good relations, long-term relations with Australia. As we said before, we have complementary economic relationship, we have a close cultural and people-to-people relationship, and strategically and geopolitically, we don't really have a conflict. I think just now, Ambassador Revy talked about some of the issues. We can debate another day about whether or not China's foreign policy in those areas is assertive or even aggressive, but I don't think that's going to in any way harm Australia or create a dominant, so-called dominant position of China in the Asia-Pacific or even larger area, in particular replacing the United States in the region. I don't think that's China's strategic intention at all. So based on that, I think it should be easy to create a good relationship between the two sides. Just not looking too far away. Just look at New Zealand. New Zealand, over the years, have maintained very good relations with China. It has managed this relationship with maturity. And in recent days, I think the Prime Minister of New Zealand will visit China again. So I think in light of that, Australia, remember, New Zealand also a member of Five Eyes and also a treaty ally with the, before with the United States. So I think it's not that this relationship cannot be managed even with the United States present, is that, you know, having a correct perception of China, where China was, where China is going, and understand that China does not pose a threat, but a common opportunity. And then I think build on that, we can have a very good and long-term and prosperous bilateral relationship.
Well, I wish we had more time, to discuss more about, Australia's perceptions about itself and China's policy in the Asia-Pacific region. But indeed, that's all the time we have for this edition of World Today. Again, I want to thank our guests, Ambassador Tony Kevin, Ambassador Jeff Reby, and Dr. Zhaohai. If you want to catch up with more of our discussions, you can find our podcast by searching World Today. You can follow us on the X platform at CGTN Radio. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. Thank you for staying with us. Bye for now.